This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Other oil companies are learning a lot from the BP oil spill.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're going to get a take on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us in the United States. The British oil giant BP continues to deal with the effects of the massive Gulf of Mexico oil disaster. Its rivals are learning valuable lessons as well. Four of the world's biggest oil companies have announced plans to spend $1 billion to construct a rapid response unit, one that could quickly move into place to collect leaking oil. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports for Marketplace.
BP isn't the only one that would suffer as a result of stricter regulations on deepwater drilling. So ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron and ConocoPhillips are committing $250 million each to a system that could be up and running within 18 months. The plan involves building a floating system that could be quickly deployed to a future deep-sea blowout. Victor Shum works for the energy consultants Pervin and Gertz, and he says BP's experience has been a wake-up call.
All companies certainly have learned from it, and they indeed in this incident demonstrated that the industry was not prepared. Over the long haul, spending will be more than this $1 billion.
Deepwater drilling has been temporarily halted in the US by the Obama administration, and critics say the only reason the companies are doing this is to restore public confidence in the oil industry. BP isn't included in the plans, though, and the chief executive of Exxon says this was because they didn't want to distract BP as it dealt with its current crisis. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer, reporting for Marketplace.
Google, of course, is king of the internet search engines here in the United States. But despite the recent battle over its licensing in China, it is still a distant second there to Baidu. Just today, the Chinese internet search giant reported quarterly profits that more than doubled. What does that mean for Google going forward in China? Marketplace's new China bureau chief, Rob Schmitz, reports.
Just ask anyone here walking the streets of Shanghai which search engine they prefer, and it starts to sound like a broken record.
Baidu.
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 That last guy actually had to ask if Google was still operating in China. But forget this unscientific poll. The numbers speak for themselves. 70% of web users in China use Baidu. Google, a paltry 24%. And that number has been slipping since Google's tiff with Chinese authorities this spring. Afterwards, it redirected Chinese users to its Hong Kong site. China internet expert Wen Yunchao says Baidu is gobbling up Google's market share.
Baidu has good business sensibility. It seized the chance when Google pulled out from China, and it's improved its own marketing in the process.
Web users here don't seem to have a problem with one dominant search engine, but the government does. An op-ed today in an online state-run newspaper hammered Baidu for being too cozy with big business. Then again, if Baidu can't take the heat, well, take it from Google. There's always Hong Kong. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Yeah, European shares are making a little money right now. They're up about 1% to 2%. Asian shares closed mixed today. Wall Street yesterday, investors had their fears about the economy confirmed by Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. The NASDAQ lost more than 1.5%. The Dow shed 1%, 109 points to close at 10,120.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com.
It's been quite a rough patch for professional golfer Tiger Woods, but despite his personal misgivings, his pocketbook is still rather full. Woods claimed the title of 2010's highest-earning athlete in the U.S., according to Sports Illustrated's SI.com. He took home more than $90 million, down 10% from the year before. A lot of people wouldn't have bet on a Tiger comeback, but those who do put money on, say, a golf tournament or a tennis match are playing into Tony Woodham's game, a sports betting hedge fund. Woodham's Centaur Group started the Galileo Sports Fund just a few months ago. Tony, welcome to the program.
It's good to be with you, Steve.
How does this work?
This works in a very similar way to lots of different funds that you might find in the financial markets. We just analyze sports probability and statistics. And what we're looking for is patterns in numbers that give us an indication of what's going to happen in the future in terms of one team playing another or one person playing another, if it's, for example, a tennis match.
So if you were putting money on a baseball game, you would look at a player's stats, such as the ERA for a pitcher or maybe a batting average, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know a great deal about baseball, so I don't want to sound as I do. But if you're in a bar and you're watching a sport and you're watching your particular team and they go a few points up in a match, quite often if they're playing a certain team in a certain area, you know they're going to concede their lead because it's what they do historically. And we just apply science to that process.
What separates this? I mean, why wouldn't we just call this gambling, sports betting?
Well, do you know what, Steve? I've had this conversation a lot. You can call it gambling if you like. I mean, as long as you apply the word gambling to the process that Goldman Sachs apply when they're trading currencies, then it's the same process. So you can call it gambling, you can call it betting, you can call it trading. It's whatever word you choose to apply. The one thing I would stress about that is that gambling is not a word that should apply to one industry, i.e. sports betting. You know, gambling exists in the financial markets, as we've discovered. My background is derivatives. I traded futures in the City of London and in the US and over in Europe for 20 years. I've worked with hundreds of different traders in the financial markets. Some were brilliant, some were risk averse, and some were just shooting from the hip and taking big risks and were effectively week in, week out gambling. So we don't gamble. I mean, we apply an intelligent process and we look for solid risk reward opportunities.
Tony Woodhams at the sports betting hedge fund Centaur, the CEO over there. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
And finally, an Air France flight attendant's been arrested and charged with stealing from passengers who fell asleep during long flights. Police became suspicious about the woman because her income as a flight attendant didn't match her lavish lifestyle. She's accused of taking cash, credit cards, even checks. I wonder if the passengers even noticed, given all the money they fork over on board anyway. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. Follow me on Twitter, Chiatakis, MMR, in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.